You're listening. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound like a broken record, but you are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Listen sponsored. Now, become a member now. Become a member not only because everything you hear is straight, everything you hear is the late, everything here is great, but we also want you to become a member because we want you to get in there and put your shoulders next to the wall like we're doing. Help pay some of them electric bills, some of our toilet papers, our napkins, our portable plates, portable knives and forks. But better than that, even for the staff, the guys are working hard here at KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And this is Screaming Jay Hawkins telling you why you got to do it. You got to do it not because it's an order, not because it's mandatory, not because it's a must, but it's because this is the only place where you're hearing the right stuff. You're hearing the truth, you're hearing the good sound, and you're digging people who knows what it's all about. So pick up on a few things and lay down some of them other things and just dig KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And remember, I said so. I, Screaming Jay Hawkins. I ain't walking, I'm talking. I'm squawking. Become a member now. Become a member of KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. I'm about to sign off. Bye.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Add him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Munro Galloway. He's the Associate Professor of Art at the University of Redlands in Redlands, California, and he is talking about Rest is Smoke, his show, which is on now at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery in the Pearl through January the 10th, 2026. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Munro.
Thanks, Joseph. Thanks for having me on.
So you're a new artist to the Liz Leach Gallery. So people in Portland may not know you. They may have just seen your show, which opened in December. It's a great show of abstract paintings, very colorful, very bold, I would say. They're really solid shapes and sort of rhythm to each painting. But just tell us who you are, aside from a professor in LA area. You know, where did you come from?
I have a mixed background because actually half of my family's from the Northwest and then the other half is from the New York area. So before moving to Los Angeles, I lived in New York City for a long time. And then prior to that, I actually went to high school in Seattle. So I have a connection to the Northwest, although it's like not very recent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is the first time that I've shown in Portland, and I'm excited to do so. We had a great opening, a great turnout. The people seem to be interested in art in Portland, which is always great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you just opened last first Thursday. Just tell us about the title, Rest is Smoke.
Yeah. The title comes from an inscription that was on a painting that I saw in Venice, Italy, and I wrote it down in my sketchbook already like over a year ago. Mm-hmm. And the entire quote is something like, what the most important things are divine and the rest is smoke. But all I wrote down was rest is smoke. So I found it, like I was looking through my sketchbook and I came across that. I couldn't remember where it was from, but it was right around the time of the fires in Los Angeles. So this would have been almost a year ago when I was starting to work on these paintings and thinking about the show, and it just seemed kind of relevant to that time and evocative in a way of some of the, what you described as some of the kind of brushstrokes and colors and forms in the painting. And I do like that sense of like a painting as being this kind of like temporary, you know, ephemeral undertaking, I suppose, you know. So that's literally where the title comes from.
But Rest is Smoke, in the inscription, it meant, you know, worldly things pass away, right? They burn up,
yeah.
They pass, but spiritual things or whatever, intellectual things remain.
True. When I started talking about it with like my partner, who's a poet, we came up with all these other meanings, you know, like resting, to rest is smoke, it kind of disappears. And so painting is almost this activity to keep you in the world, you know, to keep you alive and to keep you from turning into smoke, I suppose. My partner's a French translator. And if you say like rest is a word they say in French, but it means like
To
what's left
stay.
over too. Yeah, it's like the remainders too. So it has a couple different meanings for me.
Oh, rest as a noun in French.
Yeah, like if you say les rest, then it means like the remainders or what's left over. And a lot of my paintings are about like putting paint on and then scraping it off, and it kind of reveals these other layers or these remainders of what's underneath.
So several of the paintings really grabbed me. One in the show, people can seek it out, Light Ship. These are big. These are 54 by 48 inches. So, you know, they're a nice size. It has this sort of balance between a red, an orangey red, and a pink form in each, in three corners. Some black wave-like brush strokes in the middle, and then this streak of light turquoise down the middle. And there's a bit of yellow. There's a lot of kind of brush stroke going on, and I can't tell if that's scraping with a hard object or, you know, a brush that's not fully loaded with paint. So tell us about just the physical act of making this painting. How many times did you wave your arm around, and how many months did it take?
Yeah, I think you did a pretty good job of deducing it from what you see. And it's a combination of brush strokes, or I should say of brushes, and also large palette knives. You know, and I work in primarily, it's all oil paint, but there's also some paint that has like a wax medium, which allows you to kind of almost treat the paint like a paste. So you can put it on with like trowel it on and then scrape it off. And then I think you got at one thing that's critical to these paintings, which is that they're built up through layers kind of slowly. And the initial stage is like a really fast, like it takes place in like 3 minutes, like a big, fast gestural drawing with dark paint, with a big brush and dark paint. And then I let that dry, and then I kind of begin adding in layers of color over the top. Sometimes they go through maybe 10 or 12 different layering stages. Yeah, and then the very last stage tends to, everything's almost like shifts into place at the very last stage. So in that page, that painting you're looking at, the green in the center, but also the reds around the perimeter, kind of like almost it was like a tide coming in, or maybe like light emanating outwards. It was like kind of the last thing to be put on. And then the pink at the base, I guess, was the very final thing.
Well, tell me about that wax, because there are paintings with chunks sticking out, like, you know, half a centimeter. Is that the wax area, or is that just regular oil paint?
Yeah, no, that is, and I'm glad you noticed that, because I really like the kind of physicality of the edges, where everybody who has patched a wall with putty knows when you put the putty on and you scrape it, sometimes you get these accumulations of extra plaster, and that's the same with the paint. And I like paintings that are kind of thick and physical. They seem to me that they're kind of in the world, you know, they feel really embodied, and that was one of the things I wanted to do with these paintings. You know, they have thick and thin layers. They have built up paint. They have scraped down layers.
Another thing that you seem to do in all your paintings is leave bare edges, like unpainted canvas. In some cases, big swathes along the bottom, or very often the square corners are untouched. But how do you keep that area clear if you're doing like 12 layers of paint? Do you not like stray? Or do you clean it off?
No, I definitely don't clean it off. And I guess it started the first time, it started almost accidentally. And I left in a painting a big area of what looks like raw canvas. And usually, like, I would just cover it up. And then I didn't think that was like necessary. I like the rawness of the canvas. It has a specific kind of color. You know, it's not white, it's like oatmeal color. And I like the canvas has what we call tooth. You know, it's got like the threads of the canvas are still, if you reached out and touched it, you would still feel them. It's a rough surface. And so it kind of resists the paint a little bit when you put it on and when you take it off. So that base, that foundation is really, I think, important to the paintings. And it creates a negative space too, you know, becomes like an important, what we call negative space around whatever the form is in the center.
Do you mean in the sense that it makes the painting kind of stand away from the canvas, so it separates the square from the actual shapes?
Yeah, I guess it does. And in this painting that we've been talking about, you know, the raw canvas is on the upper right and upper left, and it kind of almost fades into the wall of the gallery so that the painting itself seems to kind of project outwards towards you.
Mm-hmm. There's another one called Nightfall. The basic shapes are sort of a large blue, kind of like a tapered oval, and the top left goes almost to the middle, beyond the middle. There's a pink bar across that. There's dark purple. I think some of the black has come into the colors you're using. So some of the blues and reds have got, you know, really darkened. Again, it's a kind of tension between these shapes that could be like taken from letters, you know, they're like mechanical, they're so clear. Oh, yeah. But then you kind of mess them up with tapering them or with uneven lines, and then there are these sort of wild lines, like in the blue there's this big loop, it looks like a kind of whiplash of purple that's come from nowhere, and the bottom, the black is very sort of rough, you know, there's a lot of transparency in the brushwork. So it's this, he's creating these beautiful shapes, but he's kind of messing them up as well. And then the bottom left corner is blank, which is kind of sends you kind of off balance. But the other thing I like is this blob of blue paint in the middle, which really sticks out. You can like stick your nose right up to it and look around it. Just give us a sense of when you were making this painting, was any of that in your mind, the sort of sense of chaos? Or was it a very active work, contemplative?
I'll tell you what, this was an early painting in the series. And prior to this, I had been making some paintings that were much more like, they looked like ships almost. They looked like vessels. And you might see the remnants of that in this, a hole shape, the shape of the vessel hull and then the sail. Oh. But then in terms of what you're interpreting or what you're picking up on, I kind of thought with these, and this gets back to the title of the show, The Rest is Smoke, that it was almost like ships in a storm, you know, that like the ships were kind of falling apart. They were dissolving into the ocean, to use that metaphor, which I think maybe is what you're picking up on in terms of the sense of those shapes being kind of buffeted or whipped back and forth or colliding or overlapping, you know. And then I wanted to say about this piece that there's a wonderful Northwest artist who's actually from the Seattle area named Morris Graves, a kind of important artist for me looking at. This is an artist who was active in the 40s, 50s. But the title of this piece comes from a Morris Graves painting.
Oh.
Yeah, that sense of nightfall, like that moment. And this is probably the painting that has the darkest palette, the more, you know, night-like palette. When you see colors at night, and they can still be vibrant, but they're all toned down. That's kind of what I was intending with the palette in this painting.
Was he an abstract painter?
Well, that's interesting because he was actually kind of moved between the two, which is, I think, kind of what I do. So he really worked from natural forms, animals, landscapes, but a lot of those forms got abstracted into forms that aren't recognizable. So his work also does that thing where it shifts back and forth between like abstract painting and more figurative or representational painting. And I always love that. I always like it when things kind of can be both things at once, you know, can be an abstraction, but then can be concrete.
Mm-hmm. My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Munro Galloway. He is the Associate Professor of Arts at the University of Redlands in California. He's talking about Rest is Smoke, his show on now at Liz Leach Gallery through January the 10th. Munro, you have one called To the Sea, which it's a bit less formed. The shapes are more ragged. It's a bit wilder. The brush strokes are a bit wilder. It has these shapes in brown and blue and black. There are sort of interstices of yellow and then single brush marks that go up and down the whole canvas in a kind of L shape or a loop of in blue, purple, and yellow, and a bit of brown. So this is a different style. Was this a different mood when you painted this, or a different era, you know, years ago?
Yeah, well, that's, I think you picked up on the difference here, which is that this was the very first painting I made, or the oldest painting in the show. And this one dates back about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And the title is loosely borrowed from the Virginia Woolf novel, To the Lighthouse. And then there's also a kind of song that's called To the Sea. But it has a much more of a drawing element to it. You see all those lines in it. Those later on, kind of, I lose the lines in the later paintings. This one to me really felt like the feeling of going to the sea. So on the left, there's more of this brown beach-like space. And then it's almost got that, to me at least, I see this almost kind of cubist movement or this sense of a figure shifting into like a watery space. So it was very literal in that sense, moving from the brown sandy part of the painting into the blue sea part of the painting.
Is this the sea of Southern California, of dreary Puget Sand and Northern Pacific?
That's a very good question. I don't know if I have the answer. I'm not a native Californian, so I guess in my mind it's more of a northern sea. My family actually is in Puget Sound, which is north of Seattle. That's where my parents live, and the sea is quite cold up there, but I do try to go swimming every time I'm up there
Oh,
visiting.
really?
Yeah, so so this I'm gonna go with northern sea. It has more of that feeling to it than California.
And the palette is darker as well than the next painting was, which is called In High Flood, and that is more like the other paintings, I think, in the show, where you've got these big bold colored shapes that are sort of woven into each other. They balance each other. It's very hard to describe what they are, but they're basically a light blue kind of boot shape, and then a claret, my favorite color, sort of messed up rectangle. The rectangle has a dark V up inverted V running through it. Below it has a kind of brown shape that could almost be, a cardboard box. It has shading and a surface, and then everything's kind of covered over at the bottom with light green and then black kind of wave motion. But this one feels like the others because of the sense of rhythm and balance I get from looking at it. Like, it's very pleasing to the eye to just bounce from shape to shape and sort of see where they're going. And to me, that's a mark of abstraction that I really find enjoyable.
Oh, thanks. I also have to thank you because I think you actually correctly, I didn't know what the name of that color was until you said claret, and then I was like, yes, that's the name of the color that I've been searching for.
That's because my favorite football team, Aston Villa, play in claret blue. So,
There you go. Yeah.
and it's a similar blue as well here, the light blue. I think listeners who are, especially those who are painters, would want to know how you build these up from nothing to this sort of very complicated sort of symphony.
Well, I mentioned in the first painting that I start with these very gestural, almost if you can imagine these fast drawings with black paint that look like ink. And in fact, prior to making these paintings, I made hundreds and hundreds of smaller ink drawings, just very quick gestural ink drawings with sumi ink and a brush on paper. And I think that I kind of got the gestural strokes into my arm, like I got it became a It was something I wasn't thinking about so much, but was just doing intuitively. So that when I move to the bigger canvas, it's like the move is already there. I kind of know what the and
Sorry to interrupt. When you were doing sumi ink on paper, was the paper horizontal on the table?
it was, which is interesting. Yeah, because otherwise it runs. And
Yeah,
so I
but
had a whole
when you did this, you were upright easel with a brush.
Yeah, and this painting is big, so it was just up on the wall. This painting is probably 70. This is a 72 inches in height painting, so it's taller than I am. And yes, it's with a big brush. The brush is probably about 6 inches in width and width, but it is with like a mixture of oil paint, which is not quite black. It's a mixture of burnt umber and ultramarine blue and maybe a little bit of viridian, and that produces a really rich black rather than a
Oh.
black black. And then I'll just add a lot of solvent, and solvent is the thing you put in oil paint to make it kind of thin and runny and make that drawing really fast. I mean, I almost feel like if I do it in more than 5 minutes, then, or maybe 3 minutes, then it gets too fussy. It gets too overworked. And then oftentimes the paint does run and I lay it down horizontally and then begin to add in some of the color layers over the top.
And of that initial drawing, how much of that is visible still in this painting?
Well, bits and pieces are. So there, where you see the black on the left, it's going to be hard for listeners. There's and then in that inverted V under the claret color, that's all the black from the early drawing. But then it comes back sometimes, and so that there's a kind of wave-like form in the very foreground, and that's the last thing that I put on this painting. So in fact,
oh.
sometimes that drawing will come back over the top.
You mean you'll go back and add more?
Yeah, like that. If you can imagine in this drawing, there's a green band that kind of stretches across the base of the painting, and over the top of that is this black paint that's been put on very quickly with a brush, and it almost kind of looks like a wave-like form that's coming up against the shore.
In High Flood, the name of the title. Was that based on an event?
Yeah, you know, again, up in the Northwest, there are these king tides when, well, there's a lot of flooding happening right now there, of course. But in this case, when I was making the painting, there are these king tides that come in that flood the beaches. And in particular, where I'm from, you know, I was kind of thinking about these high tides that come in very close to the land or cover up boats, that cover up all the driftwood, they come up to people's houses, you know. So it's that sense of like a very high tide that seems to be kind of washing up from the bottom of the painting.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, maybe depositing that, what you described as a box form or the prow of a ship on shore.
Mm-hmm. Cloud Crack is a different type of painting. In a sense, the palette is just blue and gray, you know, mm-hmm. blue and black and white. The black shape at the top left is almost like a balloon that's been cut off by the edge of the painting. And then there's a kind of blue rectangle with one curved edge. And then it gets into these huge gray shapes that are moving down. But there is the whole thing has a white slice through the middle of it. It almost runs through the whole painting. And then there are these unpainted areas too, which are white. Is this just as simple as an observation of the sky?
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. This was, it's funny that you should select this as the last painting because it's also the last one that I made. And in some ways it's the simplest one in the show, both in terms of palette, as you described, but in terms of the shapes too. And I think that it was a painting that I stopped almost before I thought it was done, and I'm glad I did, that I think there's any number of associations. For me, the black form at the top is a kind of cloud or a thunderhead that's coming in, the kind you see in the Northwest, and underneath it maybe is another blue cloud perhaps. And then the white form that you described, and it's a vertical form that kind of curves. It had that feeling that's almost the sound that of a thunderclap or of a cloud burst, you know, like a lightning almost, the way I interpret it. And again, I think there's any number of interpretations, but my interest was in, it's like, how do you make a sound appear in a painting? You know,
mm-hmm.
I think that's such an interesting proposition as to, you know, when we have these associations with paintings that are, you know, the feeling of rain or the sound of a thunder cloud.
So the name Cloud Crack, mm-hmm. that refers to thunder or lightning, to a sound?
I think so. And then that white form also could just simply be a crack, you know, in the way that it kind of separates or it runs through the whole painting from top to bottom and almost separates one side off from the other.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the paintings are, to me, about certain kinds of weather or atmospheres or temperatures. I think that's one thing I was attuned to in these paintings, like in all of them, was, you know, getting back to the title, Rest is Smoke, that at least in Los Angeles, and I know this has been the case in the Northwest too, when during some of the forest fires, you just get these really intense kind of atmospheric qualities that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're becoming more and more extreme. And I think that in all the paintings, I was trying to convey an atmospheric feeling or almost like a weather event. How would you put a weather event into a painting?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, if you turn it, you know, you tie yourself to a ship's mast and
yeah.
get out there. Talk to us a bit about abstraction, because I think of it as like a thing like jazz. You know, it came along in the mid-20th century. It was wild and radical, and, you know, it's not new anymore. It's lost the shock of the new, but it still goes on. People still make jazz. People still make abstract paintings.
Yeah.
So what is the value? What is abstraction today still looking for that maybe in the mid-20th century? Everyone was trying it because it was hot. You know, it was mm-hmm. that time of history where they had to do it.
You know, for me, I don't always feel like an abstract painter, although I acknowledge that these paintings look abstract. And I think that what I like about abstraction is that it allows the viewer, the person who's coming to the painting, to make up their own story about what it is. So sometimes it's not what I intend, and I love that. You know, I've had people see things in the paintings that I didn't know were there, or they bring their own experience to it. And that's what I think is, to me, is valuable about abstraction, is like, you can come to a painting and you can make up your own mind about what it's about. And you can't do that so easily when there's figures and landscapes and places in paintings. Then it's like the story's already being told for you. So I do like painting where when you're a viewer, or even when I look at painting, I've got to kind of figure it out. It's like a puzzle that has maybe a lot of different answers or a lot of different solutions to it.
Do you see your paintings? I mean, they're for sale in a commercial gallery, they're probably going to go to someone's home. How does someone enjoy this painting? You're going to spend a lot of hours staring at it and enjoying finding things in it, or your mood, dictating the pleasure of the painting. Is that how you see this type of work, that it rewards long-term sort of attention?
Yeah, I really hope so. That's a wonderful way to think about it, and something that I aspire to. I think it also rewards like slow looking, in the sense that I love it when someone comes into the gallery and they spend 5 minutes looking at one painting. Mm-hmm. That's like the greatest reward, because it's not like they're kind of doing their 30 seconds or less with each painting and then moving on, but they're that kind of slow looking. They will discover things that someone else might not. So just as one example of this, a lot of the paintings have these little dots in them. And really what they are like color tests. So if I want to know what kind of color to put on the painting, I'll just dip my finger in the paint and then put a little touch of it somewhere. And I think they're largely invisible.
I miss them all.
Well, in some cases, people will ask me what that is. And there's one in particular that has a purple dot that people were asking about, and a green dot. And that's just an example of something that you might not see until you spend some time with the painting. There were a couple in the second painting we discussed, the Nightfall one, but I'm just using that as an example of what I'm thinking about, or calling slow looking, where you have to spend time with the painting and seeing the different colors and relationships, and it will continue to change as you look at it, in the sense that you'll continue to see things you weren't aware of.
Yeah. I mean, do you teach history of art as part of your work?
I don't currently, but I have in the past, and I'm a huge lover of the history of art. And I spent a lot of time looking at, for instance, Renaissance painting when I was making these paintings. And the title of the show does come from a Renaissance painting by Mantegna, a painting of San Sebastian. For me, I look at lots of painting from lots of different periods, and it's always kind of like, it energizes me, and it's interesting, and I love to see how other painters have done things. So I'm kind of a painting history nerd, even if I'm not a professional.
What does the history of painting say about abstraction? Has it shut the door on it now? Have moved on?
I don't think so. I live in Los Angeles, and I see tons of abstract painting around, and I think that there's different fashions and vogues in painting, but that I think that what we're seeing is a moment where abstraction and figuration kind of coexist. And you can have, even in one painting, elements of abstraction and elements of figuration. And I'm actually most interested in that.
Yeah, I see a lot of that too. I always think of James Lavador when I think of that, because he's painting mountains, but he's also making these crazy shapes that could be anything. And there is one more painting. It's called Wave with the Meadow. And it's just very brightly colored. I think it stands out from some of the others. Its use of pink, blue, purple, it's got everything in it. I would just say to the viewers, go and see this show and look at all of them at once. Stand in the room, do a circle, because they all seem to fit together, and they all have different uses of shape that are also very similar. It's a terrible way of putting it, but they are all of a piece, which I find really enjoyable in abstraction. So you don't have to explain that one.
Okay. We'll leave that one there.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Munro Galloway. He is Associate Professor of Art at the University of Redlands in California, near Los Angeles. His show, Rest is Smoke, is on now at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery in the Pearl through January 10th, 2026. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus for the first time, Munro.
Thank you, Joseph. It was a pleasure. Stream can't tell them apart at all.
Estás escuchando KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 23 de diciembre del 2025.